everyone. Welcome into the Fantasy Bros Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Sylvester, and we've got a great show for you today. We're going to be talking undervalued and overvalued players. We've got an excellent guest on as well. It's Alex Fast of Pitcher List and associate producer at MLB. He's at AlexFast8 on Twitter. I'm at Bobby Fantasy Pro. Alex, you are an Orioles fan. Tell me about the pain.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, you can only have so much therapy. You know what I mean? to try and deal with this. You know, it is kind of nice though, because it gives me something to hope for, something to look forward to. And what is life without hope? You know what I mean?
I mean, the minor league system is void of talent too. It's going to be at least another 5 years before you guys win like 70 games.
That's so kind of you to say, and I'm so happy to be here. No, you're right. It's going to be a long trek, but you know what? It gives you. There are still things to be excited about. There's John Means. There's Adley Rutschman. Whenever that happens, there's Asher Wojciechowski. Sure, why not?
Yeah, I like Ryan Mountcastle too. If you want another name,
what about Austin Hayes? My rookie of the year pick.
I think he is a sleeper pick for a reason. I could definitely see it happening. I mean, his bat is fairly polished, and he plays in Baltimore. It's kind of like Nunez last year, right? This is a guy who's been solid in the minor leagues, and I could definitely see taking him at the end of your drafts and just hoping that you've struck golden.
I have to say, you are very much on the Mount Rushmore of fantasy baseball podcasts, and I can see why. I can see why. It's because you butter up your hosts like this. You got me all excited talking about the Orioles, but I don't think we have many Orioles to talk about today, right?
No, I don't have. Well, the thing is, you can't really have an overvalued player unless they're valued, and there's just not really much of that on the Orioles.
Oh my God.
Sorry, man. Okay, we're going to get into undervalued players first. We're each going to count down our top five, and then we're going to go top five overvalued players. First, though, I want to tell you about the Draft Simulator, which is just amazing. I've already done over 100 mock drafts on the Draft Simulator, and the reason I've done so many is because every draft is perfect. You can customize it for your league settings. You can test from, the first pick, the fourth pick, wherever you want to do it. You can test against Yahoo ADP, ESPN ADP, expert rankings, early player rankings, whatever you want to do. And it's really fast. You can do like three of these in a lunch break. I'm not exaggerating. If you got 30 minutes, you can cruise through three of them in 30 minutes, and it's free. I'm not just trying to sell you guys on something. I want you to win your leagues, and you can win your leagues if you're practicing on a realistic draft simulator. That's the Draft Simulator at fantasypros.com/draftwizard. Again, that's fantasypros.com/draftwizard. All right, Alex, so you're going to start us off here. We're going undervalued players, and we're counting it down. So who's your number five undervalued player? And first of all, what would you consider an undervalued player to look like?
Oh, that's a great question. Probably someone in my mind who, the way that I kind of approach drafts, and this is definitely something Nick Pollock taught me, the head of Pitcher List, who you had a great podcast with last week, was when you're getting into the end of the drafts, the mid-200s to 300, in my mind, you're really focusing on upside, right? You're really focusing on who has the highest ceiling. So a lot of guys that we're going to talk about today have high ceiling, and they could really overperform that plus 300 ADP that they have. So that's really all I'm looking for. Guys that can earn their way to potentially being a top 150 or maybe even top 100 player.
Yeah, for me, what it really comes down to is, I mean, it doesn't have to be someone outside the top 200 picks for me. That certainly helps because it's so much easier to outperform your ADP at that level. But I've got a couple guys in here who are like ADP 60, and I think that they should be ADP 30, or they're ADP 100, and I think they should be, ADP 60. So it's just the value that you can find in the draft. So why don't you start us off with your number five? Who do you have for us?
Yeah, it's kind of cheating a little bit, but I went with every single reliever after pick 300.
I love that. So Hunter Harvey.
Oh, he's right there.
Of your O's. Hey, we are talking about an Oriole. Look at that.
I knew I was going to bring him in there somehow. But not to shamelessly plug, but I have this. I did a talk down at First Pitch Florida about save utilization. I've got an article coming out tomorrow morning at around 8 o'clock. And in my opinion, you should really, really, really be waiting on saves. There were five pitchers in 2019 that went after pick 300 that earned you 20 plus. There were plenty of pitchers after pick 250 that got you 30 plus. So in my mind, I'm focusing on guys like Hunter Harvey, as you said, Kinsler down in Miami. Miami. Even Yoshihisa Hirano could get some in Miami. We don't even know what's going to happen in San Francisco. So one of those guys between maybe Tony Watson or maybe even Rodgers.
Maybe Diego Castillo or Jose Alvarado for the Rays. If one of these guys gets the closer job over Nick Anderson, don't get me wrong, I love Nick Anderson at his ADP, even if he gets zero saves the whole season because of all his strikeouts and ratios. But you can draft all three relievers from the Rays, and you're going to get 40 saves from one of them.
100%. The same thing in Washington with Hudson. If Doolittle gets hurt or he proves ineffective, Hudson's going to be getting 20 to 25 saves there. And this is a guy who's going way after. I think he actually moved up to like 280, 290. But still, in my mind, there's so much value there that you can either get at the end of draft or just completely punt and do it on waiver wire.
If you're talking about somebody who could get a ton of saves, now granted, this is a handcuff type of situation. Not that you need to own the direct relief backup to your closer, but you can just own these high-quality backup relievers like Dellin Betances all these years ago. Carlos Marmol, we knew he was eventually going to be a closer as soon as the Cubs closer slipped up or, you know, as soon as he got injured or something along those lines, and he was a great closer. James Karinchak, backup closer for the Cleveland Indians. Yeah, he's behind an incredible closer, but if he gets hurt or if it, you know, how many times have we seen these relievers just tank? If he totally tanks, James Karinchak could be a top-five closer at pick 416.
Yeah. No, without a doubt. I mean, another perfect example is Aaron Bummer out in the White Sox. If Colum May proves ineffective, they just gave Bummer that huge contract. He's going to slot right in there.
Great call. Yeah. Any others that stand out to you? I mean, we don't know for sure that Giovanni Gallegos is going to be the closer in St. Louis. Could you see someone like John Gant getting the job?
John Gant, and I've heard people swear up and down that it's Ryan Helsley.
I think Ryan Helsley has the best stuff of any reliever that they have, assuming that Alex Reyes isn't in the pen. I mean, I guess it's a chance it's Reyes. He got the save today in spring training. But yeah, I think Helsley has a 20-25% chance. And if you draft the closer for the Cardinals, well, I mean, he's only going to be the closer until Jordan Hicks comes back, but that could be a nice value. You're right. There's going to be a lot of relief pitcher values, and I'm waiting on saves in most of my leagues as well.
I'm with you.
All right, my number five most undervalued player. This is somebody who's being drafted outside the top 100 picks, and I don't really understand why. I guess it's injury concerns because he got hurt like 3-4 years ago, but he's been healthy the last 2 years. It's Michael Brantley. If there's anybody outside the top 100 picks who's a guarantee to hit 300, it's Brantley, right?
Yes, I love that. I think it's fantastic, and he's perfect to pair with guys like Gary Sanchez or Joey Gallo, guys, or even Rougned Odor, guys you're going to sell out for power, because he's gonna hit at least like 295 at the lowest, so I'm totally with you there.
Well, let's see. Let's look at his last 5 years. 326, 310, 299, 309, 311. He hits 15, 20 homers every year. He only stole three bags last year, but every other year before then, he stole at least a dozen. This is somebody who gets the job done year in and year out. ADP 115, that's average draft position. ECR, that's the expert consensus rankings. So 50 experts in the industry all mashed together into one ranking to see what the consensus is. Has him all the way up at 86, 30 picks earlier is his ECR. That tells you everything you need to know. I think this is an incredible steal. Now, there's a lot of outfielders I like, but he's an incredible value in my mind.
No, I agree that his career average for contact rate, career average is 91%. That's unbelievable. That's unbelievable.
All right, let's move on to your number four here, and then I've got another outfielder before I take on my first pitcher.
So this is great. Another outfielder going after pick 300 with not the same skill set, but similar in that he's mostly average, and that's Corey Dickerson going at pick around 317. He's one of like 15, 20 guys who have hit plus 300 in back-to-back seasons, including Michael Brantley.
He's Michael Brantley light, and you're getting him at pick 300.
100%. He's another, like, how, like, find me another guy, aside maybe Hanser Alberto, just to get another Oriole in there, who's going after pick 300, who has a plus 300 average ceiling. I just don't think you can.
Luis Arias.
Yeah, that's a very great point. That's a great point. And he's also in a good lineup, but he's not hitting as high as Dickerson, who's hitting third.
And who knows if he's actually going to stay in the lineup. Like, we know Alberto is not going to lose his job.
100%, because you can't lose your job to nobody. You know what I mean?
That's true. Yeah, Corey Dickerson is a really good call. And here's the thing, like, there are 20 very good value outfielders, so I don't have many shares of Dickerson, but I'm looking at his stats right now in his ADP, and I'm wondering why the heck not. Like, if I can just wait for Avisaíl García and Corey Dickerson and all these guys, why am I drafting these outfielders in the fourth and fifth round?
Yeah, that's a great, it's a great point. He's hitting third on the Marlins with VR and Anderson ahead of him, Jesus Aguilar behind him. Before that broken foot last year, the WOBA, the expected batting average, 3 years, they all kept moving up while his chase rate kept going down three consecutive years.
So we've seen him in some pitcher's ballparks, right? Everyone remembers he started his career in Colorado and he was good. But then he went to Tampa Bay and he was good. He went to Pittsburgh. He was good. He went to Philly. He was good. His 7 year per 162 game average, get this, 286 batting average, 24 home runs, a handful of steals, 80 runs, 80 RBIs. This is a guy going at pick 317, man. That is nuts. This is a good call. I'm glad you brought him up. We haven't talked about him at all this year on the podcast.
Yeah. What about you? Who do you got to pick for?
All right. I've got Lorenzo Cain, another outfielder, as I mentioned. And this is very similar to Michael Brantley. And here's what it comes down to with Cain is, yeah, did he dip a little bit last year? Sure. But he was extremely unlucky when you look at the batted ball data. Because again, this is somebody 2014, 302, 2015, 307, 287, 300, 308. Then he batted 262 last year. What the heck was that? Nothing really changed except for the luck, and that's bound to happen at some point in everyone's career. This is a guy who consistently hits a dozen home runs, steals 20, 30 bags sometimes. He's going to score a lot of runs as well, and like I said, he's durable. He's played at least 140 games in six of the past 7 years, and you're getting him at ADP 166. Another guy, ECR two rounds earlier, I think he's a good value. I'd love to have Michael Brantley as my number two outfielder. Lorenzo Cain is my number three. Of course, Luis Robert's my number one, though.
Oh, wow. So there it is, huh?
There it is. We were talking before the show, Alex and I, and I know you're not supposed to say this when you're doing a podcast, but whatever, okay? We're just going to break down the fourth wall. So we were sharing back and forth. Actually, I didn't tell him who my guys were, but he told me who his were, and I was like, oh, man, we're going to have a big fight about one of them. He was trying to guess who it was. Like, oh, you're a Cardinals fan. It's probably Jack Flaherty. No, I'm going to agree with you on Jack Flaherty. It's going down when we talk about Luis Robert.
Oh, God. Let me tell you what. Listen, when a guy of your stature says to someone like me, hey, there's one guy I disagree with you on, and I'm not telling you who it is, that doesn't make for a great night's sleep. I'll tell you that much.
What are you talking about, man? Your work is awesome. Like, that's why we had to have you on the podcast. I'm really excited to hear why you're low on Robert. I don't think you'll be able to change my mind, but at least I want my listeners to hear the other perspective. So, yeah, go ahead.
You know what I always say to Nick? It's like, I never have any problem without changing people's mind. The only thing I want to be is understood. You know what I mean? Because that's the fun of fantasy baseball, right? It's like, oh, I disagree. If everyone understood, drafts would be so boring.
Like, Nick came on here the other day, and he was talking to me about David Price, and I was like, oh, no. I really don't like David Price. But you know what? I'm going to be talking tomorrow. I'm recording a podcast with Joe Pizzapia tomorrow, and we're going to be talking about how I've changed my mind on David Price, and it's all because of your partner, Nick.
Yeah, he does that. He really does that to you. I'll tell you that much.
That's why we have all these conversations with people around the industry, because everyone looks at things a different way, and someone might see something that I don't see, and I might see something that somebody else doesn't see, and we're always adjusting our rankings because we want to give you guys the best advice for your drafts, and so I'm willing to change my mind. I'm sorry if I was wrong about someone a month ago, but if I'm wrong, I'm going to admit it. I was wrong about David Price. We'll see about Luis Robert, but I hope I can change your mind. Let's keep going, though. Who do you have as your next underdrafted player?
So I'm staying past the top 300, and I actually was very much out on this guy at the beginning of the year, and then seeing this ADP makes me back in, and that's Dylan Cease at 317.
Oh, yeah, a guy who throws 100 going super late in drafts.
seriously, with some filthy breaking stuff as well? Like, I understand that there are command woes, and that's why I was very out, and he was at the back end of my top 100 personally, but he seems to be taking a step forward with them. It's very encouraging to hear that that was the one thing that he was working on mostly this offseason. Today's start was not that great. It actually started off fantastic. I believe it was Nick Senzel leading off. High heat, really placed it well. Then a curveball.
Oh, Nick Senzel playing, huh? That's interesting.
Yeah. It was good to see. I don't know how long it's going to happen. If he breathes, he might be on the IL. But after that first pitch strike, second pitch strike for a curveball, and the third pitch, Senzel just took to right field pretty hard. But if he can get that command right, and listen, this is pick past 300. You could take him for a buck, take him in your last round, and the upside is SP2, SP3.
I agree that's his upside. And you know what? I'm the opposite as you on Dylan Cease. I was high on him at the beginning of the spring. I've kind of soured on him. Now, I'm not going to fight against you. I don't think it's a bad pick whatsoever. I mean, it's always worth it to get a high upside guy. There's a few more high upside guys that I'd rather have in that range, because here's what I see with Cease. Does he have one of the best fastballs in baseball? Well, it's one of the fastest, but is it one of the best? He gave up a 356 batting average last year. It's 637 slugging percentage on his fastball. It gets crushed. It's super straight. Is this going to change? Because it was great in the minor leagues.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it can if he can command it well. I mean, Tyler Glasnow's fastball is straight as an arrow.
Yes, it well, kind of, because it's coming straight downhill.
Yeah, that's a great point. He does get far better extension, and the perceived velocity on that fastball is better than almost anyone, but Cease is still top five in perceived velocity. Actually, might be number two right behind Glass now. So I really think when it gets hammered, it's because he's behind 3-0 and he has to put something in the zone. So if he can actually hit up in the zone and bring that curveball in, it could be a different story. But you're totally right in preaching caution. I it's so weird that we've kind of met in the middle on him, because I was also so out.
But why be cautious when you've got a guy who can be a starting pitcher too, and there's no risk whatsoever? If he's bad, you cut him. You don't have to start him right away. Let's wait for 2 weeks and see if the guy looks good. You don't have to play him right away. It's like Freddy Peralta last year when I drafted him. That one sucked, but I didn't lose my ratios because I played Freddy Peralta. I locked him on my bench just to see what we had, and it didn't work out. And I did the same with Chris Paddock, and it did work out.
Yeah, it's such a fantastic point that you make, too, and it's something that I know we were thinking about over at Pitcherless. We had an article come out about it, about who these high-ceiling guys who you're getting late, who are they facing at the beginning of the year, right? Because that's when you're going to learn pretty quickly. Like, Dylan Bundy faces the Astros a bunch, so I won't draft him because he's probably going to struggle there. But if you look at Dylan Cease, the first series, I don't know if he's going to start that one. That'll be against the Indians and then the Red Sox before going to the Mariners and Twins. Maybe if he gets one of those Mariners starts, the Red Sox could be a little bit scary, but I don't know. Maybe if he fixes that command, it won't matter.
Sure. And this is a guy that last year in AAA, 4.48 ERA, just 9.6 Ks per nine, 1.56 whip. That was before he was called up. I don't know if something was wrong with him last year, but his stuff is much better than that. The year before in AA, 2.40 ERA, 11.6 Ks per nine, 1.06 whip. I think that last year, something wasn't right. Smart kid. For if you hear him talk, I think he'll fix it. He's got good stuff. All right, let's move on to my number three here. I said that I've got a pitcher for you guys, and I feel weird saying this one, right? Because it's just kind of a boring player, but he's going super late. I don't really understand it, because Madison Bumgarner every year is solid.
Yes. Scream it from the mountaintops. Scream it from the mountaintops, Bobby. I love it.
Is that because you want me to convince people to draft a guy who's a good value, or because you want people to take him early so you can get a good value?
No, I think it's just a great pick. This is a guy that Nick and I picked out in our labor draft for $6.
But, I mean, here's the thing about Bumgarner, right? Every single, well, not every year because he's been hurt a couple years because he, like, fell off an ATV or whatever. But, you know, 206 innings in 2013, 217 in 2014, 218, 227, 208 last year. He struck out 200 batters five times in 7 years. His ERA is always under four. And, in fact, before last year, when his ERA was really unlucky, his ERA is always under 3.4. His whip is always under 1.2, often under 1.1. And everyone would say, okay, well, he's moving from San Francisco to Arizona. There's really no difference. Now that they got the humidor there, there's really no difference. They're both extreme pitcher's parks.
I love it. I love what you're saying. I mean, in terms of velocity, we saw that fastball actually take a turn in the right direction for the first time since 2016, hitting about 91.4, sitting 91.4. The spin rate on every one of his pitches was a career high last year. Curveball, cutter, fastball, all career highs for him. So I am totally with you there. I think people are kind of blowing it out of proportion about the switch from Oracle to Chase. I think that's all a great point. I am totally with you there. And it lets you take more risks early, right? It lets you take risks on, like, I don't know about Clevinger, because although he's probably my favorite pitcher in baseball, the injury threat is still there. But you can take, you know, a kind of scary upside guy to pair with him, to pair with Mad Bum a little bit later. Or should I say Mason Saunders? Sorry, excuse me.
When you say yes, Mason Saunders, for those of you who don't know, can you explain this story? Because a lot of people haven't heard of this.
It's wild. So I guess it turns out that during the season, every once in a while, or maybe it was just the offseason, but Madison Bumgarner was competing competitively in rodeos under the pseudonym Mason Saunders. It's unbelievable. And, like, apparently Bruce, the manager over in San Francisco, knew about it. And they're like, oh, yeah, that's just Mad Bum. Like, that's amazing to me.
Man, there are so many characters in baseball. Like, you went to Cespedes running around with boars and stuff.
Oh.
Oh, man.
I was even to throw it back. You remember Spaceman Bill Lee, right?
Oh, yeah. Bill Spaceman with the Ifu's pitch.
Oh, yes.
I always throw the Ifu's pitch in wiffle ball. It's unhittable.
It's unhittable. Unfortunately, every pitch I throw is an Ifu's pitch because it's just slow and I don't know where it's going.
Madison Bumgarner, ADP 114. So he's going in the 10th round. I want to ask you a couple guys if you'd rather have them than Mad Bum. These guys are all going ahead of him. Carlos Carrasco.
Ooh, with the mild elbow inflammation that just came out, I'm going to take Madison Bumgarner, but I think overall the ceiling would be higher on Carrasco.
Eduardo Rodriguez.
100% Mad Bum.
Yep, me too. Ryu.
100% Madison Bumgarner.
Me too. Okay, what about Soroka?
Oh, man, that's a good one. I have...
This one's really tough. I've got them about neck and neck.
Yeah. Oh, man, I think a lower whip from Mad Bum, but a lower ERA from Soroka, but more innings from Mad Bum.
So probably more Ks as well. Yeah, I've got Mad Bum one spot higher, and I've got him right behind Zach Wheeler, right behind Chris Sale, because he's dealing with the injury. I don't know what's going to happen with Chris Sale. I don't even really want to talk about it. Right in the territory of Sonny Gray, Lance Lynn. I've got him ahead of Brandon Woodruff, though.
That's so funny, because it literally, for me, goes Mad Bum into Brandon Woodruff.
Okay, so Brandon Woodruff, I guess we're going to talk about him later, but ADP 89 and Mad Bum ADP 114. Let's save it for later. So I said Mad Bum. Who do you have next for us?
So to wrap up my pitchers, and then my number one guy is a hitter. Another guy after pick 300, and I think that's going to change moving forward. That's Jordan Montgomery at, ADP 318. He's sitting 94, 95 in spring training. He's pretty much guaranteed that rotation spot with all the injuries. He's on a Yankees team that's going to win you a lot of games. So I think we're talking a ceiling here that's a high 3 ERA with a mid to low 20% K rate. Probably going to get you 140, 150 innings. That's really nice for free, in my mind.
Let's just look back at him in 2017 when we saw him on the mound. 155 innings, 144 Ks, 3.88 ERA, 1.23 whip. I think his ceiling's higher than that.
Yeah, you could be right. Yeah, I mean, if that fastball really is sitting 94, 95, I know one of the guys over at Razzball named Bidon did some analysis saying that the velo gains in spring training don't necessarily translate. But even if they don't, he's sitting 92, 93 with that curveball to pair it with. Yeah, man, sky could be the limit.
So you're taking him in the last round of drafts, or is there somebody else that you prefer maybe a little bit more in that territory?
At the last round of drafts, it really kind of depends on, I guess, what I'm looking for and kind of needing there, because I don't know. Jordan,
let's say John Means is out there, because I like John Means a lot.
How dare you do this to me? Make me choose between an Oriole and a Yankee? I think I would go Jordan Montgomery. More wins, more Ks probably, but maybe less whip.
I prefer Means a little bit more than Montgomery. Same with Alex Wood. If Alex Wood is out there, oh man, I'm taking him. Everyone knows, everyone who listens to my podcast at least knows I love Eliezer Hernandez. If he makes the Marlins rotation, oh man, I'm going to be pumped up. And if he doesn't, so what? I'll cut him.
No one caused more of an argument between Nick and I last year than Eliezer Hernandez.
Who won? Because he sucks.
Well, yeah, he sucks. So Nick won because I was on the Eliezer Hernandez side.
See, but you're right in the long run, because he was most unlucky pitcher in baseball last year. When you look at his expected WOBA over on Baseball Savant, it's better than Kershaw, better than Shane Bieber. It was amazing. He was great.
No, he was great, and he was finally starting to put it all together. He was just like, he just needs to sequence a little bit better, but I feel like the raw stuff is actually there. That slider's got like a near 18% swinging strike rate, which isn't elite, but it's still serviceable. The four-seamer's nice. I'm in.
Yeah, before he was called up as well, he had the third best minor league numbers in baseball. It was Brennan McKay, Mackenzie Gore, and then Hernandez. And he might not have been a big prospect, but he was dominating. He was nasty.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with a name that we haven't talked about like at all. A name that, oh man, this is going to be wild to hear. Actually, you know what? I'm going to go with him at number one, because I'm moving him up to number one. I'm taking at my number two a player who's being drafted in the late second round. I would take him at the turn if I had the opportunity to. I'm not messing around with JD Martinez. He's just one of the best hitters in baseball.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I feel like people are just kind of forgetting about him for some reason. It doesn't really make sense to me.
Baseball Savant, he was extraordinarily unlucky last year. He was just as good as he always is. But, I mean, who would you rather have? JD Martinez or Freddie Freeman, who's going five picks earlier?
Yeah, I mean, you're getting over 300 average out of JD Martinez, virtually guaranteed. You're definitely going to get almost 40 home runs out of him.
Yeah, he could win the Triple Crown. Wouldn't surprise anyone.
Yeah.
Even with Mookie Betts gone, this is still probably the best lineup in baseball, because they were just that much better than everybody else last year. A couple other guys going ahead of him, Jose Ramirez, Alex Bregman, Max Scherzer. I'd take him over Nolan Arenado, believe it or not, just because I think Arenado likely gets traded. Justin Verlander, that'll drop with the injury news. And I don't know if he's actually injured, but they're taking it easy. Anthony Rendon, I'd take Martinez over all of them. I'd take him over Gerrit Cole, in fact.
Oh, wow. That's a hot take. I like that.
Yeah, I know that's a hot take. And as soon as I said it, I was like, oh, man, people are going to come after me. But, you know, Gerrit Cole moving from Houston to New York, a lot of people are discrediting that. That's a big jump. Like, Houston's a pretty extreme pitcher's park. New York's an extreme hitter's park. We saw the same thing with James Paxton, and Paxton was great. He wasn't exceptional like Gerrit Cole, but he took a 30% step back, and that's what's going to happen with Cole. And if it does happen, he moves from what? Maybe the second best pitcher in baseball to the fourth? I've got him as my number three pitcher right now. Wouldn't it take him in the first round?
I kind of skip over pitchers in the first round anyway, but there's also, you know, a new pitching coach, a new environment. You know, we don't know what's going to happen with the sticky substance he theoretically uses on the balls to doctor them. So, yeah, I can understand where you're coming from for sure.
Do you think that's real?
I believe Bauer.
Trevor Bauer has been saying for a long time that Houston's pitchers are cheating.
Yeah, I mean, I believe him in two ways. One, I believe that everyone uses a doctored substance, but B, he talks about those Bauer units, right? Which is like RPM over velocity.
And I think Trevor Bauer knows everything. If he says someone's cheating, he's almost definitely right.
Yeah, I'm kind of prone to agree with you on that one.
And I probably shouldn't jump to conclusions. And there's some Astros fans listening to me right now, like super pissed off. I'm sorry, guys, but I believe Trevor Bauer. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I can't even get into that.
Okay, so JD Martinez was extremely underrated last year when you compare his on-paper numbers to his underlying metrics. Let's go to your number one now.
My number one, we're going to move back to a hitter. We're going to stay at the back end of the draft, but we're in the top 300 right now, which is actually kind of a change recently, and that's CJ Krohn.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I was just talking about him the other day. Yeah, this is a great value.
Dude, I'm really interested. If you look at his StatCast page, just looking at first baseman, right? First in barrels per plate appearance, second in barrels per batted ball event, which is one of the stickiest year-over-year metrics for batters, fifth in exit velocity on line drives and fly balls. He's cut his chase rate down four of the past 5 years. I mean, I'm in. I understand. I understand he's on the Tigers. He's still going to hit fourth. He's still going to hit probably 30 to 35 home runs.
I was going
to
say, if there's anybody going this late who's going to hit 40 homers, it's Krohn.
I 100% agree, without killing your average.
Unless Justin Smoke plays every day. Like, if Ryan Braun gets hurt, then I'm picking Justin Smoke there, but it's looking more and more like Braun's going to be playing some first base, which just infuriates me, because I was a big Justin Smoke guy.
Oh, really?
I was. I think now I'm a Krohn guy, though, so I like this call at number one for sure.
Yeah, I'm interested. I mean, like, originally I was like, okay, maybe he's probably a corner infield, middle infield kind of guy that people are just kind of punting on. He's a great opportunity for home runs.
So I wrote an article, I guess last week, you guys can go back and take a look, similar 2020 fantasy baseball players with ADP gaps. And so I'm looking at Avisail Garcia face Andrew Benintendi. Surprise, surprise, Avisail Garcia was better everywhere. He's probably going to be again now that he moves to Milwaukee. But then there's a bunch of overrated Cubs, and I'm not saying this because I'm a Cardinals fan. I'm saying this because Chris Bryant's much better in real life because he walks so much. Anthony Rizzo's so much better in real life because he walks so much. And then Javi Baez is so much better in real life because he's a very good defender. He's super flashy. But you know what? His ADP's 36. And the guy I'm telling you, ADP 80, same position, he was better last season. He had a better batting average. He had 40 more RBIs. He had more runs. He stole the same amount of bases. He hit more homers. Marcus Semien was better than Javier Baez last year, guys. And he's going 50 picks later. He's my number one undervalued player. I've been getting so many shares. Even if I get Mondesi in the fourth round, I've been getting a lot of Mondesi in the fourth round. Even if I get Mondesi, I want Semien as my middle infielder because this dude is just so underrated. He's one of the best players in baseball.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. You know, that shortstop position is just so deep. So I love that, right? Because guys are going to reach on what they think are some of the best ones. Like, I have no problem, you know, taking a Lindor and a Story in the first round. But if you don't have that slot.
I'm just taking Soto over both of them. But yeah.
But that's what I'm saying, too. If you want to do that and then take Semien later on, I mean, that's totally fine with me. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, he's the number 13 shortstop off the board. He's going behind Bo Bichette, Jonathan Villar. Man, I love Semien so much.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a top 80th percentile, 81st percentile in ex-WOBA, like 76th percentile in ex-slugging. Yeah, he had a great year last year, and he's on a great team.
All right, let's turn it around and go overvalued. And this is going to hurt some feelings, I'm sure, because there's a reason that these guys are being drafted where they are. Some people really believe in them. I think I know where you're starting, and or that's your number one, but I totally agree with you.
Hyunjin Ryu at 119.
Okay, so that's your number five. So your number one is the one I big time agree with. Now, Ryu, I saw him on your list, and I was like, dang it, I wanted to use him. So I totally agree on this one, too.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah, so for me, like, there's three major reasons. One, the injury concern, right? He's not going to get 170 innings pitched again. And the last time he had back-to-back seasons of over 150 was 2013-2014. And also, the Blue Jays, I believe, said they're just expecting 150 out of him. So all of a sudden, you're at 150 innings. He's in a division which wallops changeups. Now, some people think that's shallow analysis, but when you look at, because it's like, oh, well, they haven't seen Ryu's changeup, right? But when you look at other changeups in that division, you have John Means, Andrew Cashner actually had a top 10 changeup last year, Tommy Conley, Ryan Yarbrough, Erod as well. There's a lot of good changeups there. And then the most important thing for me, the least flimsy, is he does not have that Dodgers defense. While I think that the Blue Jays defense is going to take strides forward, it's nowhere near the Dodgers defense. I just see so much regression for him all across the board.
Not going to fight you on this one. I think it's a great call. His ADP, again, we just mentioned he's going ahead of Bumgarner. I can't do that.
Wow.
ADP 119. He's going ahead of Dinelson Lamet. What do you think about Lamet? Because Nick argued with me about Lamet, and I'm a big believer.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's just all about command when it comes down to him, right? I mean, I like, obviously the breaking stuff is there, whatever you want to call it, with that curveball slider thing it is, which is just absolutely fantastic. I did a little bit of this study on this thing called put away rate, which is how efficient a pitcher is with a particular pitch or his entire arsenal, how well he can put away a guy. And there is some chance of regression with his breaking pitches in terms of how efficient he was with them. But if he can fix that command, then I think he can take a step forward.
You know, here's a couple guys who needed to fix their command to take a step forward in the past couple years. Trevor Bauer, Blake Snell, Lance McCullers. We were talking about all these guys as Cy Young candidates. I think it could be the same with Lamet. Now, he's got to stay healthy, and it certainly is risky, but ADP 133. So you gave your first overvalued player. I'm actually taking out my number five, and the reason why is because it's very similar to your number one. I don't want to steal your thunder, so instead I'm going to go with a guy we haven't talked about all that much. It's Austin Meadows. You know, the thing is, Austin Meadows was really good last year, but how much regression are we actually expecting out of a guy who hit 291, 333 homers, 12 stolen bases, just all of a sudden?
Yeah, I don't know. I might push back a little bit on this one. That 547 X slugging was, I think, like one of the best in the league last year. And the big concern...
But he's also in Tampa, so it's not going to quite reach his X slugging.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. I mean, but I also think he's going to be one of the only Rays who plays almost every single day if he can stay healthy. And that, to me, also makes him kind of appealing. I agree with you that I think the ADP is a little bit high, but I think he's going to be a pretty special player again.
Yeah, I mean, I think he is special, but here's the thing is, you can get George Springer at the same spot. You can get Yordan Alvarez at the same spot. These are guys that we know are just absolute mashers. I mean, Yordan Alvarez was maybe the best hitter in baseball last year when he was healthy. He was right up there with Yelich, Trout, Bellinger. It was those four right at the top. Meadows is nowhere near that.
Yeah, and I just realized something that is actually a point in your favor. If you look at the expected metrics between his WOBA and his expected WOBA on the breaking stuff and on the off-speed stuff, it looks like he got real lucky in terms of what he actually did. So there could be theoretical regression there on everything that's not a fastball.
Yeah, and on the flip side, he was a top 20 prospect. He's still young. We may not have seen the best from him yet. I mean, it's kind of like Ozzie Albies, right? And now Ozzie Albies has been here for 2.5 seasons, and he's been really good each season. Keeps getting better, but, you know, Ozzie Albies is so young. Sure, he batted 295, 24 homers, 15 steals this year. Maybe that jumps to 310, 30, 15 steals this year.
Yeah.
So I guess the same could be true for Meadows. I just can't imagine taking him over Springer or Alvarez, so I'm not going to have any shares.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm Springer over Meadows as well.
Okay. All right, let's move on to your number four then.
My number four, are you ready for it? You ready to do this?
Oh, I'm ready. Oh, no. Now I remember who it's going to be.
You're ready for Luis Robert.
What's your problem? What's your problem, man?
I have problems with these kind of guys, the kind of sexy new toys like the Vladimir Guerreros of 2019 and how high they can theoretically go, right? The difference is Guerrero was at least projected to hit 300 with like 25, 30 home runs, while Luis Robert's projected to hit in the 260s and has the potential to be a 2020 guy.
Maybe he bets 240.
Yeah, exactly. It could be a lot worse. The knock on him in the minor leagues is that he would swing and miss a fair amount. 22% K rate in AA over 224 plate appearances, jumps up to 25% K rate in AAA, all the while that sub 6% walk rate. I think pitchers are going to give him a heavy dose of breaking stuff, and I don't know if he's going to have the eye to lay off a lot of those pitches. I know Mike Gianello wrote a fantastic piece over at FanGraphs that echoed a lot of the same concerns that I have, but two really interesting things are your 70 grade speed doesn't matter if you're not on base. And he's a guy who...
I mean, like Modesty. Modesty's on-base percentage was .290, but he stole 40 bases and missed 40 games last year.
That's a very good counter. But Modesty also puts the ball on the ground, and Robert made a swing change and hits 56% fly balls in AAA, right? So you can't run out balls in the air. And that's what kind of scares me. It's like they have this great speed guy who all of a sudden they changed his swing plane to make him elevate to sell out for power. But now that might not be reaching his potential. So at the end of the day, I'm not saying he can't be a 2020 guy. But if you're drafting him in the top 100, you need him to be that because he's probably not going to hit higher than 260.
Okay, so you think he doesn't hit higher than 260. What do you think Fernando Tatis is going to hit this year?
I don't think the regression is going to be nearly as bad for him because he's going to be able to put the ball on the ground a little bit more frequently and run it out and keep that BABIP elevated.
Is it going to be 415 again, though?
No, it won't be 415, but let's say it falls to 350, which it could, then he's still hitting 270 at the lowest.
So here's the thing. Luis Robert, he's got the strikeout concerns, right? In the minor leagues, Tatis had a 30% K rate. Robert had a 26% K rate. So why aren't we worried about Tatis? Tatis still had a 30% K rate last year in the major leagues. His home run to fly ball ratio was entirely unsustainable. I mentioned the 415 BABIP. Robert, over his full minor league career, has a batting average 30 points higher than Tatis. If we're not worried about Tatis's batting average, I don't understand why we're worried about Robert's batting average. I'm worried about Tatis's batting average. I think Robert is a better version of Tatis. Tatis is going in the second round. Robert's going in the eighth, ninth round. Robert doesn't have as much speed, but he's got more power. I think the guy goes 30, 20 this year while he bats 260.
Yeah, I think my counter to that is if you're drafting him in the top 100 where people are currently taking him, that has to be it. You know what I mean? There is no room for failure.
Yeah, and it might be better. I mean, because like think about Yordan Al. I've mentioned this so many times, but think about all the rookies who we thought, okay, they're going to be good, but just how good? And then they're league winners. Pete Alonso was one of the best hitters in baseball last year. Yordan Alvarez, a couple years back, Corey Seager, a couple years back. You know, we've had all of these guys. And if anyone's going to do it, it's going to be Robert, right? He's the best rookie for a reason. He could very well be a league winner like Trey Turner was a few years back.
Yeah. I mean, I think it really kind of, you know, you put it super well at the beginning of the cast. It like comes down to how people want to manage those drafts, right? If you load up with a bunch of, you know, if you load up with some Michael Brantleys or something in the outfield that's a little bit more of a sure thing, if you build up around Robert to take advantage or to take into account that risk, then I'm okay with it. But for me personally, the way I draft, it's just too risky.
Yeah. I mean, I think that he's a better version of Tommy Pham, maybe not quite there on the batting average, but more home runs than Tommy Pham, lesser batting average, and he's going, you know, two rounds after Tommy Pham. So
exactly, but also hitting far lower in the lineup than Tommy Pham.
That's true. Much better ballpark.
Yeah, much better ballpark for sure, but think about how many PAs he's going to lose if he's hitting eighth, ninth over the entirety of the year, and especially if he struggles early. I don't know what they're going to do with him. I mean, they're obviously going to keep him up.
Tommy Pham's missed like 200 games in the past 5 years, though, with injuries, so that's my concern with him a little bit as well.
Yeah, that's true. That's a very good point.
All right, let's keep moving here. It wasn't that bad. We can still be friends.
Yeah.
I probably am going to hold a little bit of a grudge, though, and then tease you when Robert goes like 50-50 this year.
That's fine, because I got a great victory lap on the people who said that about Vlad Guerrero last year, and I already left my one-star review on the cast, so I'm...
I couldn't believe he was sneaking into like the fourth round. What in the world?
Unbelievable.
Wait, you said you left a one star on our podcast? I almost didn't catch that. That's pretty good. Okay, my next one. Thought about putting Johan Moncada here, but instead I'm going to put his teammate, Tim Anderson. Both of these guys had extremely high BABIPs. And I get it. Tim Anderson is, everyone knows he's going to regress, but I think he's going to regress quite a bit more. And again, this is a position that is so dang deep. Where do you have Tim Anderson?
Yeah, he's a little bit lower down for that exact reason. Like, I'm taking Simeon over him for sure in terms of shortstops. Like, that chase rate is still going to scare me a little bit, especially when you're talking about BABIP regression. This is a guy who chases almost 50% of pitches, right? He has a 45.2% O swing. So that's, you know, when you put that together with a 400 BABIP, that just doesn't add up.
Right. Yeah, he batted 335 last year. Now, he did miss 30 games, and he still had 18 homers, 17 steals, so he's going to probably be a 2020 guy. But the past few years, he batted 240. He batted 257. I don't know. I might rather have an Elvis Andrus who's going to steal 30, 35 bags every single year. He gets 80, 90 runs. We know he's going to bat 280. He does every year.
So wait, Tim Anderson or Luis Robert?
Oh, Luis Robert by four rounds.
By four rounds? They're both 2020 guys? You get a higher average out of Tim Anderson, even if he does fully regress?
I would bet anybody. I'll take this bet with anybody. Luis Robert's batting average over Tim Anderson's batting average this year.
Let's do a friendly wager,
okay?
You and I. Because why not,
yeah,
right? I'll take the Tim Anderson side about average higher than Luis Robert's, and you'll take Luis Robert.
Yep, sounds like a plan. I also think he hits more homers. Stolen bases will probably be about the same. Anderson's going to be a little higher in the lineup, but yeah, I'm taking Robert higher, and I could see him being significantly better than Anderson. We'll see. Let's move on to your number three, however. This is a good one.
We're going to stick with kind of a stolen base guy, and that's Jonathan Villar at 58. A lot of red flags for me with Villar. 313 xWOBA isn't entirely problematic because his speed is going to have a positive impact. I think what's worrisome to me is people are drafting him like he's a sure 2020 guy. And while I have no problem with the notion that he's going to steal at least 20 bags, I really don't know if he's going to hit over 20 home runs. Again, going from Camden Yards to Marlins Park.
That's the thing. Yep, that's the thing.
It's scary. I mean, they moved the fences in, but they moved them in from like center, right center field. So I don't know if it's going to matter all that much. He's also, I think people are kind of ignoring like the wear and tear on your body playing center field is a lot different than playing second base. And he's playing center field in Miami, and he's going to be running all over the place, which to me increases any chance of injury. I don't think he's going to be playing all 162 games.
It's a big ballpark, too.
Yeah, it's huge. He played every game last year. He's not going to do that again this year. So I think you're expecting, when you're drafting him like that, a 265 average with like 35, 40 stolen bases and 20-plus home runs. I see the stolen bases. I just don't see the home runs at all.
So here's some shortstops, okay? We already talked about Tim Anderson batting 335, 18 homers, 17 steals. We had Mondesi. Machado qualified at short last year. Javi Baez, Gleyber Torres, Trey Turner, Francisco Lindor, Xander Bogaerts, Alex Bregman played some shortstop. Marcus Semien, Trevor Story. Where do you think VR finished in fantasy shortstops last year?
Oh, probably third.
He was number one, man. He beat out all those dudes.
Wow, that's wild. That is on the Orioles. On the Orioles.
Yes, yes, on the Orioles. He was the number one fantasy shortstop at probably the deepest position. That blows my mind. So at the start of this, I was saying, oh, yeah, this is a good one. I don't know anymore, man. He's being drafted as the shortstop 11. He was number one last year. Oh, crud. I totally agree because he's moving from Baltimore to Miami. He's going to be playing the outfield. Those are great points. He's not going to play every game. Makes me nervous, though, man. But the thing is, I don't know who. I'm not taking over Machado. I'm not taking over Mondesi. So you could steal 70 bags. I'm not taking over Torres, Baez.
Well, what about, who are you taking between him and Bo Bichette?
Semien. I've got Ketel Marte over both of them. I really don't like Bo Bichette. In fact, I think he's coming up. I'm talking about him tomorrow. I really don't like Bo Bichette this year.
Oh, all right. I'll listen in on that one because I'm excited to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, Carlos Correa. I think I like Elvis Andrus more than Bo Bichette. So a lot of guys.
Oh, wow. Oh, I love that. I'm very excited to hear that.
I mean, yeah, Elvis Andrus is going 70 picks later. I'd take Elvis Andrus before I'd take Bo Bichette. So bring it on Twitter, guys, at Bobby Fantasy Pro if you disagree with me. But you'll hear why tomorrow.
Oh, I'm excited.
All right, so let's see. You went VR at number three. My number three is Brandon Woodruff. I already mentioned that we were going to talk about him. I guess you're low on him as well?
Yeah, I am. I just think he's being a little bit overdrafted for a guy who's losing the most elite catch framer in baseball.
That's a big freaking deal.
It is. Yeah, it is. And I understand that the fastball is fantastic and he's got the fastball slider, but there's also injury concern. I think he's not going to be great in quality start leagues because they're going to go to that bullpen. I think Nick calls it counseling, getting counseling. So yeah, I'm with you.
You know, Brandon Woodruff, ADP 89. What's the difference between Woodruff, 122 innings, 3.6 ERA, lots of strikeouts, and Lance McCullers, who's going 100 picks later?
Yeah, one guy's going to be capped at 120 innings.
You think so? You don't think they let McCullers go over 120?
Maybe. I don't know. I think even if they do,
Okay, let's throw Julio Urias out there. Do you think he's capped at 120? What's the difference between him and Woodruff? 100 picks later.
No, I'm with you on that for sure, especially because they just officially gave him the fourth spot in the rotation today. So yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, I can't believe they were talking about not letting him in there. Oh, man, I would have been furious. Luke Weaver, same kind of thing. 100 picks later. This is a guy who was much better. He was much better than Woodruff last year, but he got hurt.
Yeah. I'll match you on a hot take here. I would not be surprised. This is a hot take, and I really don't like them that often, but why not? I could see a year in which Mitch Keller is better than Brandon Woodruff.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a chance that happens, and I'm not saying it's the most likely thing. But what would you put the odds at? 20%? 25%?
Yeah, I'll put it at 20-25%. If everything clicks for Keller, God, there's just so much amazing upside there, and you can get him so much later in drafts.
Yeah, this is a lot like Glasnow, right? Glasnow was so bad. He was the worst pitcher in Major League Baseball. He went from being the best pitcher in Minor League Baseball to the next year being the worst pitcher in Major League Baseball to, I mean, if you look at him inning per inning, there was nobody better than Glasnow last year. Nobody. I mean, I guess if you include like, you know, Yates or Josh Hader, then those guys were better, but those are relievers. Inning per inning, starting pitcher Tyler Glasnow was number one last year. I'm not saying Keller could be that eventually, but I mean, he could. If he finishes as a top 15 starter, would it surprise you?
No.
Yeah, it's definitely possible. I went with Woodruff, so now we're to your number two, and this is someone I 100% agree on.
Number two, then, is Jack Flaherty at 23. I'm deeply reticent to believe that second half is sustainable. I know that even with the not-so-great start, he ended the year with a 2.75 ERA, but let me cut right to the chase of what scares me, and it's the fastball. I just don't think it's that good. It had a sub-10% swinging strike rate in the pitch, which barely cracks the top 50 among starting pitcher. Spin rate, 32nd percentile. Active spin, which is how much spin contributes to movement with guys like Verlander and Cole, number one. Jack Flaherty's was 600th. It had a 232 BABIP last year, which was slightly better than the 197 BABIP the year before. I just don't think he really places it that well either. I'm not saying he's a bad pitcher. If he introduces that curveball a little bit more, maybe he could even take a step forward. But for me, guys are banking on that second half being the end-all be-all, and I just don't see it happening again.
It's not like Yu Darvish where it was completely legitimate, right? Yu Darvish was incredible. He was better than Jack Flaherty last year. It was just that he was the single luckiest pitcher in baseball over the second half. You look at his BABIP over the full season. He had an unlucky first half, and he still had the third best BABIP of qualified starting pitchers last year. You look at the left on base percentage. Where was it? It was the third best left on base percentage in all of baseball. Blake Snell regressed a ton last year. You know why? Because he had these same exact warning signs. I'm not saying Flaherty's not great. I'm saying you can't draft him in the fourth round, guys. This is coming from a Cardinals fan, okay? I want to believe in him. He's not this good, though, yet.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think the only saving grace, the only counter I can prove, and I'm playing devil's advocate to myself, is that BABIP is sustainable because he has the same Cardinals defense behind him as he had last year. But that's still so much to rely upon, especially where he's going in drafts.
Well, it doesn't matter. He only throws 39.5% ground balls.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah.
Yeah, he was just unbelievably unlucky. And when I realized that, I got really sad because I want the Cardinals to win. I think the Brewers are going to win the Central. There's just too many red flags for the Cardinals, and the Brewers are, you know, picking up all these guys that I love. Man, I love what they did this offseason. I wish they would have kept Grandal, but okay, let's move on to my number two here. I already mentioned Javier Baez. I'm going to talk about him a little bit tomorrow as well. I don't think he's bad. I just think Marcus Semien 40 picks later is awesome. So Chris Bryant, I already mentioned that he's just overrated because of the name value. He's got an MVP. You know, he's this big superstar, right? He's one of the faces of baseball. He walks a ton. He's moving up to the top of the lineup, and he's injury prone. Frankly, what he's done the last couple of years just doesn't warrant his ADP. Now, do you agree or do you like Chris Bryant where he's being drafted?
I think that shoulder is just so scary.
Shoulders are the scariest, man. If he played first base, it would be one thing, but he plays third base.
Yeah, I agree with you. So, like, I don't know if I can buy. It's so funny. Almost every projection system has him hitting over 30 home runs again. And I don't know why. I'm kind of taking the under on that. Obviously, I think we'll see an uptick, you know, probably in some.
He's hit 30 home runs two times in the last 5 years. His MVP season, he hit 39, 102 RBIs, batted 292.
I just think that shoulder injury scares me so much that it's tough for me to buy over 30. And then, you know, where he's going to, this is a guy who could theoretically hit low 270s, right? That's possible. He hit 272 in 2018.
Yeah, 280 in 2019, 276 in 2015. He did have a couple balloon years there, but this is a guy whose best calling card is his walking, right? He's going to walk 70, 80 times in a year, and that's great. It's going to help with runs a little bit. He's going to get over 100 runs if he stays healthy, but he's only going to drive in 70.
Yeah, especially leading off.
So would you rather have him or Machado? Because Chris Bryant's going higher.
I think Machado, while he will not return to the Oriole Park days, will have a bounce back the year this year, so I'm going Machado.
Yeah, I'm going Machado as well. I also want to mention this because we haven't really been talking about these higher round guys. We've got all the third basemen, Arenado, ADP 10, Bregman, ADP 14, Jose Ramirez, 19, Rendon, 18, Rafael Devers, 25. Devers is my number one third baseman. He was the number one third baseman last year, and he's still a kid. He's going to keep getting better.
Yeah, I don't know why people are so reticent to buy into that. I would much rather use those first picks on an outfielder or a shortstop and then wait and get Devers.
And I'm not saying draft Devers at the end of the first round like you have to do with Arenado. His ADP is in the third round. You can take him at the 2-3 turn. I just think he's better than all these guys. I mean, he's the only one that steals bases besides Ramirez.
And like, if people said to me, if one of these guys is going to hit over 300 this year between Devers and Bryant, I'm taking Devers, like without a doubt. So if he's going to hit over 30 home runs likely, and he's going to have the same amount of runs and probably more RBIs with a higher average, why are we taking Bryant over Devers?
Yeah, I really don't understand that one. Okay, let's move on to your number one. And this is about to be gold because our listeners need to hear this. Now, I think most of our listeners know this, but there are some of you who need to learn this lesson because you are going to save yourself a ton of draft capital.
So the most overdrafted is every single relief pitcher in the top 300.
All of them.
Like all of them. Great start, right? By some ADPs last year, the top three relievers off the board, top three, Edwin Diaz, Blake Treinen, Craig Kimbrell.
Oh, are you serious? Those three were 1-2-3? Those guys sucked.
Those three were 1-2-3. That's all three of them. That's an aggregate of ESPN, RT Sports, Fantasy Sports, all the websites, right? Every single ADP. And they were the 1-2-3. I think they finished 15th, 27th, and like 32nd respectively, okay? So let me do a quick breakdown of some of the guys who I think could have that exact same thing happen to them. Let's start with Liam Hendricks, okay? The Athletics have not had a single back-to-back saves leader in I think 11 or 12 years.
So basically ever. They've never done it.
Seriously. I think the last one was Grant Balfour. That's how long it's been. Last year at this time.
I forgot he even played for the A's. When I think Balfour, I think he'd been on the Rays.
On the Rays, yeah, exactly. He last year at this time, you and I could have had this exact same conversation, but just put the word Treinen in instead of Hendricks, and people would have been just as shocked, right? You could have said Treinen is going to be the guy getting the saves, and they would have said it's impossible. But now we have Hendricks, who's a guy who showed an uptick in velocity that came out of nowhere, and he's so dependent on that velocity, right? If that goes away, then comes in Soria, then comes in Yusmeiro Petit, and you already hit the nail on the head earlier with Nick Anderson, right? I mean, the Rays have utilized, I believe it's 75 different relievers to get a save since 2012.
That's incredible. What a stat. A couple other guys, Brandon Workman. If he slips up, Matt Barnes is right there. And Brandon Workman has bad control. He only gave up one homer last year. That's not sustainable. Craig Kimbrell was terrible last year. He's on a short leash. Edwin Diaz was terrible last year. He's on a short leash. Taylor Rogers has some great guys behind him. Brad Hand, I mentioned James Karinchik. Let's say in Brad Hand's case, or Roberto Ozuna, or Kirby Yates, one of these guys goes down with an injury. Now, when they go down with an injury, you automatically assume, well, he's going to get his job back, but it's a little bit different, right? Because you have to work your way back up. You have to regain your control, get comfortable with your body. And if someone comes in there, if Emilio Pagan takes over the closer job from Kirby Yates when he goes on the IL for 20 days, and Pagan's awesome, they're not just going to give the job back to Yates. He's got to earn it back. Same with Ozuna over Ryan Pressly. Same with Brad Hand over Karinchik or Emmanuel Clase.
100%. But yet we draft them every single year as if they are sure things.
We see this happen every year. Yes.
Every year. Yeah.
Okay. Now,
isn't that the definition of insanity, right? Is that what it is?
I will argue with you a little bit because Keone Kella at ADP 201, he has no competition at all. He's going to get the saves right away. I'm fine with him. I am fine with Nick Anderson just because he's so good that even if he doesn't get the saves, I think he exceeds his ADP. I mean, how many times have we seen these guys, Dellin Betances, right? Every single year, Chris Devinsky, where they outperform their ADP just because they get so many Ks and they pitch enough innings that they're going to help you a ton in ratios as well. I think Nick Anderson, even if he doesn't get the saves, is being drafted late enough. And he could be this year's Josh Hader.
He could be, but theoretically, Josh Hader only existed because Corey Knebel got hurt, right? If Corey Knebel was pitching last year, Josh Hader might have still been the fireman, which could be what Nick Anderson could be this year.
Or they just turn him into an opener, right? I mean, if the Rays are going to do something crazy, if any one team's going to do it, it's the Rays. And it's going to work because it's the Rays.
They were one of the teams that would take a relief pitcher and put him at first or third base so they could bring him in again to have the better platoon splits.
You know what? We've got a little bit of time, so I'm actually going to give my hottest take I've ever given on any podcast of any sport. Are you ready for this?
I am so ready.
I think Kevin Cash is more important to the Tampa Bay Rays than Bill Belichick is to the New England Patriots. I think he's the best manager in all of sports, because think about it this way. He is operating with a payroll 30% of his competitors. You give Bill Belichick a payroll 30% of the Miami Dolphins, he gets smoked, man. He gets absolutely smoked. They don't win a freaking game. Kevin Cash is winning 95 games in the AL East. He's changing the game. Everybody is copying him, man.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I think over the past 6 years, they have won more total games than like the Yankees. I think it's like something crazy like that. They've won a heck of a lot of total games with no payroll, no attendance. They're innovators. They're truly innovators, right? So, and they're the perfect example, though, of why you shouldn't be taking saves so early. Last year, they used 11 different relievers to get a save. 11. This isn't your typical organization. You're right. They're forward thinking. They don't care about your proven capital C closer. They just want to win games.
I love it, man. I love Kevin Cash. I wish he was my manager. Now, Bill Belichick's great. Don't hear me wrong. He's the greatest coach in NFL history. But the difference between what an MLB manager and an NFL head coach can accomplish, I think there's a big gap. Because there's so many teams who aren't doing the advantages that the Rays are doing.
I never thought I would speak for Patriots fans, but at least he's the GM. Whereas we don't know if maybe this is the GM for the Rays making these calls.
That's a good point. Although the Patriots, you ask any Patriots fan, their drafts have sucked the past 5 years.
Yeah, that's a great point, too.
and it really helps. I mean, imagine if the Rays had Mike Trout, right? That's Tom Brady. Except Tom Brady's more important than Mike Trout. So I don't know, man. I'm going Kevin Cash, and you all can bring it on Twitter. Here's my handle. If you guys want to fight me on Twitter, it's AlexFast8.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
All right, here is my number one most overrated player. And it bums me to say this because I like the dude. I love what he did last season. And I've always been a fan of Charlie Morton when he was going outside the top 100 picks, outside the top 150 picks. But this is a guy who's got some durability concerns. Yeah, last year he pitched 195. Before then, he's never pitched more than 170. And he keeps getting better, but how long is that going to happen? He's old, man.
Yeah, okay. Here's my one counter, right? 2015, 129 innings. 2017, 146. He had that bad injury in 16, obviously. But then 167 in 18, 194 in 19. Upward trajectory each time.
So you think this is just the new him?
I agree with you that it's tough to believe that this is the new him, but the one thing that makes me think differently with a new organization, maybe they just literally figured something out in terms of like nutrition or workout that makes it work for him. But you're right. It's kind of risky to say, hey, I'm going to get 190. I'm going to get 180 innings out of Charlie Morton again. And right now people are drafting him like that's a guaranteed thing.
ADP 50. I just can't draft him over Patrick Corbin. I can't draft him over Zach Greinke, Syndergaard, Glasnow.
Yeah, I think I would still take him over Glasnow. I don't know. I'm a little bit scared about Glasnow right now.
Why?
I mean, I think Nick might have hit on this yesterday, but I don't know if the splitter is necessarily the best thing for him. That kind of scares me a little bit. We also haven't seen it.
It's a volatile pitch. Yes, it is.
It is. And we haven't even seen it in spring training. He threw one changeup in his last outing, and then afterwards in an interview, he was like, yeah, that was a really bad changeup. So, listen, the fastball curveball combination is elite, but he needs a third pitch to take the next step.
This splitter works out, is he the most likely pitcher in baseball to have an ERA sub 2 this year?
If the splitter works out, he's a Cy Young winner.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm taking him at pick 73, man. I'm taking over Charlie Morton, who's going two rounds earlier. All right, Alex, that's all for today's show. This was a lot of fun. We're going to have to do it again. Thank you for coming on.
Seriously, thanks so much for having me. This was a blast.
Yeah, our pleasure. And guys, give Alex a follow on Twitter at AlexFast8. I'm at Bobby Fantasy Pro for Alex Fast. I'm Bobby Sylvester. Thanks for listening and enjoy your baseball.